Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today. We're going to be talking about water efficiency and water quality in the next few minutes. We have three guests in to talk about that. Tom Brown is a master plumber in the Wisconsin Department of Commerce, and he can talk about the technical side of water-efficient plumbing. Tom, it's a pleasure to have you with us today. Jeff Ripp is Water Conservation Coordinator with the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin. He'll be talking about the importance of conservation and how consumers can save money by making changes or fixing leaks. And Doug Wittish is Showroom Manager of First Supply in Madison. He can explain the cost and benefits of WaterSense toilets and other water efficiency products. And there is a website that has a lot of information there that you should be aware of. It's epa.gov/WaterSense/FixAleak. So epa.gov/WaterSense/FixAleak. Gentlemen, again, pleasure to have you here today.
Great, thanks. It's good to be here, Jim.
And included in today's conversation, we'll be talking about the EPA WaterSense program, new water-saving devices in the market, fixing leaks, alternative plumbing and wastewater reuse systems, encouraging efficient water use and water rates, and the PSC's role in promoting water efficiency. Not included are well-permitting groundwater laws, contaminants, and drinking water, which are covered by the DNR in other programs. Gentlemen, thank you for being here. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number for you is 1-800-642-1234. This is Fix a Leak Week, sponsored by the EPA's WaterSense program. It's a time when families are encouraged to check for water leaks and drips in bathrooms, kitchens, and yards at home. I don't know if you know this, but leaks account for 14% of the average in-home water use. It's almost as much as showering. And 10% of U.S. homes have leaks that waste 90 gallons or more every day. So when we talk about stopping the leaks and the drips, how do we know that we've got a problem here?
Well, there's a number of ways to identify leaks in your home, and I'll turn it over to Tom in just a second. I just wanted to say thanks. It's really great to be here again on the Ideas Network and to talk about water efficiency. This is really an important issue for the state, especially to come on during Fix a Leak Week, which is really a nationwide campaign to help raise awareness about the importance of our water resources and what homeowners and others can do to maybe save those resources for the future generations as well. And if you can save a buck or two by fixing leaks in your home, that's always a good thing.
You bet it's a good thing. And let's talk a little bit about identifying these leaks and steps to take to improve the situation.
Well, a lot of the leaks that are coming about, or I should say a lot of times people will find out that they have a leak in their home was when they receive their water bill and finding out, why is the bill higher than normal? A lot of times it's not the faucets that are leaking, but it's the water that's the movement in your bowl of your toilets, either through sticking flappers or leaking flappers, or the fill valve itself has got a little piece of debris in it, and it's causing it to overfill. So that's basically the number one where people get caught off guard about, gee, I got a leak in my home. Where the other thing is we remember the old cartoons where the faucets are dripping and it's driving somebody nuts. Well, you know, those are the easy ones to see, but it's the difficult ones that slide by. So
I was quite surprised, and it really shouldn't have been, that if you have a leak in your toilet, you can put a little food coloring in the tank, and then if it drips into the toilet, you'll be able to tell there's a leak going on.
That's correct. That's one of the easiest ways of finding out if something is going wrong with any of your toilets in your home.
So. Mm-hmm. Well, a leaky faucet that drips at the rate of one drip per second can waste more than 3,000 gallons a year. A showerhead leaking 10 drips a minute wastes more than 500 gallons a year, and that's enough water to wash 60 loads of dishes in your dishwasher. Let's talk about the WaterSense program and some of these new water-saving devices, and Doug Wittish, talk about some of the new products that are available.
Sure. Well, there's a great number of new products that are out on the market or have been for quite some time, and as time goes on, there are most of the major manufacturers are going in that direction. So you will find a number of low-flush toilets or high-efficiency toilets, which is identified as a product that will use 1.28 gallons per flush. that can be just a standard toilet or a dual flush toilet.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a dual flush toilet, you have the choice of flushing either for liquid waste or solid waste, and it needs to average 1.28 gallons per minute per flush.
Do most toilet manufacturers have a dual flush option available?
Yes, you're finding most manufacturers are having that option now, as well as a lot of lab faucets are going having the WaterSense label, shower heads. And in fact, even there's a waterless urinal for residential use that has been promoted by Kohler.
Mm-hmm. So that's the EPA WaterSense program. I hadn't heard of it before. Is it a new program or something developed years ago that's just gotten more attention?
This is Jeff. Yes, it is a relatively new program. In 2006, EPA launched its first effort to make a nationwide brand for water-efficient plumbing and appliances, similar to the Energy Star program, which most people are probably familiar with. The difference with WaterSense and previous water-efficient efforts, though, is in addition to the water-saving criteria that Doug talked about, they are also developing standards so that you know that the product is going to work the way it's supposed to. I think there's been horror stories in the past about water-efficient toilets that didn't work, or you had to flush them two times to get the waste to go away. And the new program with WaterSense really is designed to address those concerns with performance. And as EPA goes on with this program, they've added a whole bunch of standards, including standards for new homes, so the entire home could be a WaterSense certified home. And they're mm-hmm. looking at adding things like shower heads and faucets. And another big area where they're working is on the irrigation, which is the in-home private lawn irrigation systems, not the large agricultural irrigation systems. So that if you're going to install an irrigation system for your house, you'll have a weather-based sensor that would tell that system to shut off if it's raining, for example.
Right. Tom, let me ask you about repairing leaks in appliances in your home. Let's suppose that you have a faucet that's leaking. Is that an easy thing to repair, or do you need to replace it?
It just depends on the type of faucets that's available. It depends on how old the faucet is. And some of the newer faucets that are out there are very easy to repair. They come apart very easy. A lot of plastic parts in them now that they can kind of slip in and out. The older faucets have a lot of brass fittings. They kind of corrode depending on the type of water that's out there,
mm-hmm.
Especially in hard water areas like kitchen sink faucets. Typically, you have hard water going to the cold side. They're a little tougher to take apart. The main thing before you attempt to repair any faucet or any fixtures, make sure that you know where the water shutoffs are. So, and make sure that your water shutoff actually functions and that you can turn the water off. But like I say, there's a lot of kits that are available. Most faucet brands now have parts and schematics that are available right on the web, that you can at least know how to take it apart before you attempt to pry something that shouldn't be pried. So that's a quick way of replacing a faucet, is by getting on there with something that's going to wreck it compared to, again, be able to put it back together again.
Mm-hmm. So. How about shower heads? Is that a low-flow shower head, for instance? Is that easy for a homeowner to install?
Well, the low shower heads are typically easy. One of the concerns that we have in repair for those is that the shower arms are not normally the thickness of a regular piping that's out there. So if you don't hold back on some piping, you can actually twist the shower arms off. And if you crank too hard on them, you can actually break the thread off inside the wall. So you just have to be careful with it, is what it comes down to. But most of the shower heads are on the end, and as long as you're taking caution, you can typically get them off fairly easy. So.
Okay. We're talking with Tom Brown, who is a master plumber in the Wisconsin Department of Commerce. Jeff Ripp is with the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin. Doug Wittish is showroom manager of First Supply in Madison. And our telephone number for you to join in the conversation is 1-800-642-1234 as we talk about water efficiency and water quality. Jeff, let's talk about the importance of conservation. Why is it so important to conserve water?
Absolutely. We live in Wisconsin, and obviously part of what defines us here in Wisconsin is our wonderful water resources. And we're a lot different than the desert Southwest. But conservation is still really important for a number of reasons here in the state. Water isn't always available to us in the quantity that we need it when we need it, and it's also not always available at the right quality. So, for example, in parts of the state, there's radium concerns or arsenic concerns, and from a public water supply standpoint, it costs a lot of money to treat that water to get it up to drinking water standards, and there's a lot of energy costs involved in that as well. And so by saving water, we're actually reducing the amount of energy and chemicals and other inputs that we put into the water system. Plus, we are, in certain parts of the state, we are experiencing declining groundwater aquifers, and this is a relatively new phenomenon, and there's been some legislation introduced by Senator Miller and Representative Black in this session to address some groundwater issues. And I'm not going to talk about that today, but just to let people know that there are certain concerns with groundwater, and if your well dries up, you certainly have a problem. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of concerns about making sure that we protect our groundwater resources, not only for ourselves, but also for future generations.
Talk a little bit about the impact that the Public Service Commission has on local municipalities. For instance, in the Northwest, where they have the declining aquifers.
Sure.
What kind of impact does that have on community water systems?
It really does. For those that don't understand what we do, the Public Service Commission does regulate the rates and the service standards for all utilities in the state. That includes the electric utilities as well as municipally owned water utilities. And as part of our duty is to make sure that the utilities are indeed charging the appropriate rates for their service, but also protecting the supply that provides that water for all of their customers. And so we interact with the communities in a lot of different ways. One is to help them make sure that they're recovering the cost of replacing their pipes that are in the ground, which is another source of big leaks that are a major concern for our water resources, as well as making sure that if they want to implement a conservation program, that they can do so in a cost-effective way. And we've worked with a number of utilities on implementing programs to provide toilet rebates, for example, where the consumer would get a check from the water utility to replace an old, inefficient toilet,
mm-hmm.
and with some rate design structures and how we pay for water, that we will not necessarily discount the price of water for volume, but as you use more, you also pay more to help cover those costs of that increased infrastructure.
I know that Madison has a rebate program for purchasing new toilets. Is that right, Doug?
Correct. Yes, City of Madison and also now the City of Fitchburg.
Okay, probably other areas of the state.
Right.
And we'll talk more about water efficiency and water quality after we look at the latest news with Tom Brown, Master Plumber in the Wisconsin Department of Commerce. Jeff Ripp is Water Conservation Coordinator with the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin. Doug Wittish is Showroom Manager of First Supply LLC in Madison. And we'll talk more with them after a look at the latest news. A reminder that coming up tomorrow at 11 on Garden Talk, Shelley Ryan, the Wisconsin gardener, will be talking with Jason Fishbach, ag agent for Ashland Bayfield County, and Professor Brent McGowan about the hazelnut industry in Wisconsin. But let's check the news. Good afternoon. I'm Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy to have you along with us today as we talk about water efficiency and water quality in Wisconsin. We have three guests. Tom Brown is a master plumber in the Wisconsin Department of Commerce. Jeff Ripp is Water Conservation Coordinator for the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin. Doug Wittish is Showroom Manager of First Supply in Madison. Again, gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
To talk about things. Let's go to the phone because Ginger is on the road and she's been waiting to ask a question. Hi, Ginger.
Hi there. We've been thinking about replacing our old 40-gallon tank water heater with one of those new tankless heaters, both for water efficiency and for heating efficiency. And now I've been told by our local inspector that plumbers don't care to deal with them because they break down and they're difficult to deal with. Is there anything to that?
Tom?
Well, I guess I haven't heard that one yet where they're breaking down. Typically, most of these that are out there right now are very reliable. They've been on the market for decades already, so the newest ones that are out there are more efficient than the ones of the past. They do have maintenance issues that have to be dealt with, and it all depends on the quality of the water that's actually going through it. So I'm not so sure if these are huge things to overcome. It really depends on what you're hoping to get out of your water heater. As far as the efficiency, these are very efficient. There have some drawbacks as far as on some local areas, as far as the water quality, or I should say the water quantity that can get through it in heat. One of the things with the that have been proven with these is that they do deliver a constant pressure of hot water. So I'm not sure if that
helps terms you. In terms of cost, Doug, you sell tankless water heaters, I presume?
Yes, we do, yes.
Is there a major cost above and beyond the normal water heater?
Typically, it'll be a higher price point than a standard tank water heater, but just to add something there of what Tom had said, if what has been suggested or what a lot of the contractors or plumbers will do is put an inline water filter prior to the tankless to take some of those mineral deposits and things out of the water to help on the maintenance side. Just like with anything, there is maintenance involved in that type of an equipment. But we've had very good feedback on the use of those. Sizing is very important, making sure that it's sized correctly. For the amount of water that's being used in the house, how many people and how many fixtures and so on and so forth. But it's been a good seller for us.
Yeah. I assume there are charts that sort of show number of people, how much they use to be able to determine how big a tankless water heater they should have?
Yes, yes. You know, whether you have if you have a whirlpool in the house, if you have, you know, how many bathrooms, how many people, what, you know, the daily schedule is, things like that. And if they're sized properly, they will do a very good job.
Ginger, does that solve the question?
That sounds good to me. That's what I'd always heard, that they were so wonderful. So
all right.
Take your word for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ginger. Appreciate your call. If you'd like to join in on the conversation, the number is 1-800-642-1234, or our email address is talk@WPR.org. This is Fix a Leak Week, sponsored by the EPA's WaterSense program. And among other things, I found out that showers use about 17% of the water, toilets 28% of the water, and leaks account for about 14%. So you can see that the amount of water leaking from U.S. homes could be substantial. In fact, they estimate that the total water leakage is more than a trillion gallons of water a year. It's equivalent to the annual water use of Los Angeles, Chicago, and Miami combined. It's hard to think about when you don't realize how much is being wasted.
Well, absolutely. And in Wisconsin last year, our water utilities, and they're just the public water systems, pumped about 200 billion gallons of water. And that's for the entire state. And so a trillion gallons is really a lot when you think about how much water we do waste through leaks. And for the average customer, this can translate into some real savings on their water bill. And most people that are on a water utility system pay both a combined water and sewer bill. And so for every gallon of water you save on the front end from a leak, you're not paying for that as well on the wastewater charges. And so those savings can really add up, especially during these tight economic times where people are already watching their dollars pretty closely.
Let's go back to the phone to Mike in Minneapolis. And Mike, what's on your mind today?
Some comments on the tankless water heaters. People talk like these are something that was just invented in the past, I don't know, 10 or 15 years. We had one of these when I lived in Germany, when my father was in the Air Force. We had one of these in our home on the German economy back in 1960. It ran off of natural gas. I actually live in La Crosse, and about 3 years ago, my water heater failed. And I wanted to replace it with the tankless water heater, and I ran into the same problem that one of your previous callers did. You know, that when I was looking for somebody to install it, I could buy one from Home Depot and Menards and several other places, but nobody would knew how, and they were reluctant to take on installing it for me. I also have experience with these in the military over in Bosnia in our shower units. We had ones that ran off of 220-volt electricity. That's what our generators produce. And these, and one heater would produce the water for two shower units, two people to take a shower simultaneously. And they work great. And these things were in heavy use at least 6 to 8 hours a day, and I never knew of one of them failing.
In terms of finding somebody to install a tankless water heater, is that a problem today, other than what the gentleman has described? Doug?
Well, he's right. This product has been very popular in Europe for a number of years. So it isn't a new technology. It's just something obviously new to us here. And there is a learning curve, I guess, when it comes to installation. But there are a number of contractors out there that have installed a number of these types of units. They understand how it works. They understand how to size it. And we can certainly work through that with the plumbing contractor out there and making sure it's sized properly. As far as, you know, recommending a contractor, certainly, you know, ask that question. You know, what's your experience in installing tankless water heaters and so on and go from there. But I think you'll find that there will be a number of contractors in this area and other areas that have experience in installing the product. So
I got another comment, if I can.
What's that?
I have another comment,
yes,
if I can.
Yes, what is it?
Well, I know I have relatives that are pretty thorough do-it-yourselfers, and they've installed two of them, and one of my cousins installed one in his parents' home as well as in his home. And particularly with the gas-powered ones, I don't think there's any problems or requirements where that's located with an electric one, but with the gas ones, it seems like they need to either be located on a wall with outside access, or because it's like in my case, where my traditional tank water heater is located in the inside interior of my utility room in my basement, I would have to reroute the plumbing and so that the tankless water heater would be mounted on an outside wall where it would have direct access for venting.
That sounds reasonable,
Doug. Absolutely correct or not.
I guess my comment would be that we wouldn't consider this to be a do-it-yourself install product because you are dealing with a gas line. It depends on your capability, but I truly believe a contractor should be involved where they have some experience with this particular product because there will be questions regarding the code that come up, and those contractors will know that, more in tune with that. But, I think that from an overall standpoint, they're fairly easy to install, but I think in most cases it should be installed by a professional.
Mike, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate hearing from you. Let's go to Doug. Hi, Doug.
Hi, how are you today?
Very good, thank you.
Say, I'm a water operator for the village of Bangor, Wisconsin, and I'm currently doing a cross-connection survey throughout the town, and I was wondering if your guest could touch a little bit on cross-connections and why that's important to have safe drinking water, safe potable drinking water to the residents of towns and cities across the state. And also I'd like to comment to Jeff from the PSC that thank you for that brochure on Fix the Leak Week. I was able to print out copies and send to every water customer in town, so hopefully they'll read it.
Fantastic. Thanks for doing that, Doug. I really appreciate your hard work up there to get the word out. And another thing I would say, just for if there's any other water operators out there, during those cross-connection surveys, it's a great time actually to go in and survey for leaks for your customers as well, because you're in the premises anyway. And that's one of the things that we've been promoting is you don't need to make two trips out there to do two different things. But I'll turn over the cross-connection talk to...
Question I have is, what is this cross-connection survey?
Cross-connection survey is being required by the DNR through all public buildings and dwellings. And what it involves with is, and when we have water outlets... we have to protect the potable water, the drinking water, from any contamination that might result from a cross-connection. Basically, somebody hooking up, even as simple as your outside garden hose, hooking it up to a faucet, and possibly having some kind of negative pressure that's put onto the water system, and that can actually draw the water back into the home, into the city mains, and can contaminate not only the drinking water for yourself, but for your neighbors and communities. This is especially important with some of the outside faucets that are out there where there's a lot of pesticides, there's a lot of fertilizers that are drawn from water for home use, and again, any kind of negative pressure that's added into the building, and it can actually be even a difference in elevation in the building itself that can cause these. you can have a low pressure in the main for whatever reason, from use being done or possibly even a fire where the city has to hook up to a fire hydrant, which is pulling lots of water. And again, this is something that's very important that has to be done. A lot of the fixtures and supplies that are available for repairs, especially in the water closet part of the toilet, the fill valves, a lot of these, if you look at some of those, there's going to be numbers on the top of them that talk about what the ASSE number that it corresponds to. And again, we look at ASSE numbers as being basically a standard type of certification on appliances, products, and that type of thing to make sure that it's equipped with the proper backflow protection. So, it's all there, and cross-connection audits are done to protect everybody's drinking water.
Doug, thanks so much for the call.
Yep, thank you.
Good luck to you. Thanks for being with us. And let's try Craig in Pewaukee next. Hi, Craig.
Hi, good morning. I should say good afternoon. Thanks. Mm-hmm. Thanks. I'm listening to your conversation here, and I just wanted to give a quick call. About 6 years ago, we put in a tankless hot water heater in our house. We live in the Pewaukee area. And listening to your conversations this morning, I agree 100% with what one of the gentlemen mentioned about putting in an inline filter for the cold water before it enters into the tankless hot water heater. We have a lot of minerals in our water, and I unfortunately did not do that. So what I had to do was I actually paid a plumber to come in, put in what they call wellstone isolator valves, basically for the cold water coming in and then the exit. And I can actually isolate that hot water heater and use a flushing kit to take out the minerals and to clean the sensor. I have to do that about every 6 months, or else what happens is, when you turn on the hot water, it takes forever for the hot water to finally make it to the kitchen area.
Sounds good, Tom.
And I would highly recommend anybody that puts in a hot tankless hot water heater to put in those isolator valves, because somewhere down the line they're going to have to clean out that system, or else they'll be very unhappy with the performance.
Yes, that's typically type of the maintenance that the owner's manual talks about, where these systems may have to be cleaned yearly. Some of them are more, but it all is going to depend on the quality of the water. And most Wisconsin residents are into groundwater, and typically our water is fairly hard here. So you're going to have some kind of water conditioner, or you're going to have to make provisions to do this maintenance. And again, the maintenance still may be required because of, depending on the volume of the water and again, the water quality. So,
mm-hmm. In terms of hardness, Jeff, is the hardness in southern Wisconsin the same as in the northern part of the state? Or is there a geographical imbalance that
it's not necessarily that consistent. Certainly anywhere where you have limestone, that's some of the hardest water that we have in the state. But it really depends on the depth of the well as well, and what, mm-hmm. what kind of rock that the well is put into and what the bedrock looks like. But typically, all of our groundwater utilities, groundwater communities are going to have pretty hard water. If you are supplied by a utility that gets its water from Lake Michigan, then your water would be a little softer just because it's a surface water.
Okay. Let's go to Jeff in Milwaukee next. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good.
I have two questions, actually. First one is I have elderly parents who, after a fall in the tub, purchased one of these walk-in tubs with a door on the side, mm-hmm. and it has... it didn't really have a spec sheet that came with it, but the capacity is far more than a standard tub. And my father had some concerns about the overall volume of use with that tub. It initially starved his 50-gallon hot water heater with a pre-mixing valve already in the system. So I told him he should get a hot water on-demand system to cover that, but he still remains concerned about the overall volume in using that tub, and has now turned it from an expensive sit-down safe tub. He's just using it as a shower. I've even jokingly told him when he takes a bath to wear a life preserver to eat up some of the volume. But are there any tricks of the trade with those types of tubs as to efficiency, water efficiency? And then my second question is, Has anyone studied the efficiency of bidets versus standard toilets and the removal of toilet paper? I'll take all the comments off air. Thanks.
Okay. Doug?
Well, regarding your question on the walk-in tub, we are seeing a lot more people come in asking for that product. The design of the product really is to provide a deeper water, obviously, because of you're in a sitting position, so the water level has to be higher. They're really, off the top of my head here, I can't think of anything that's really going to reduce the or improve the efficiency of the product other than having an on-demand type system. You know, that's really what the product is designed for, is to have a deeper water level to be able to get in and out of the tub and be able to have that water level that you need. So there really isn't a whole lot that you can do there. I guess the only advice on the walk-in tub, really, if from a purchasing standpoint, is making sure that the door is a good seal. And that technology has come a long way here in the last 5 to 10 years as well. So, but nothing that's really going to save you money or have the product be more efficient.
I'm not surprised that people are coming in because there's a major advertising campaign going on to sell these.
Yes, absolutely. It's you will see there's actually a kitchen and bath show down in Chicago here in about a month, and there will be a number of manufacturers there showing that product. And it basically has one use and that's what it's designed, to do, to be able to walk in and sit down and be able to get in and out of very easily.
Mm-hmm. And the efficiency of a bidet?
Well, that's a good question. You know, another product that obviously is very, very popular in Europe, hasn't really taken off here in the United States. We have them in our showroom. But it really comes down to be a convenience product. We don't sell a whole lot of them. We have them if people are looking for them. Usually it's people that have been or traveled in Europe and like the product and want to add it. But it's more of a convenience product more than anything. Haven't really looked at it from an efficiency standpoint, just because the volume just isn't there to really go in that direction, I guess.
So. Let's go to Mary next in Dyersville, Iowa. Hello, Mary.
Good morning, or good afternoon, actually.
Sure.
Welcome, and thank you for taking my call.
Okay.
My question is, do they have shower heads that have timers on it? Do they turn off within so many minutes or seconds for teenagers not to waste water?
Doug?
Nothing that I've seen that's been mass marketed. I guess maybe a manual timer might work a little better. I've heard parents do that before for their teens, is just set a 10-minute timer or 5-minute timer. When that goes off, their shower time is up. But I'm sure that you can find something out there that would be able to shut the water off if you wanted to. But nothing that I've seen from a mass marketed standpoint.
Oh, really? Maybe you ought to invent that.
That might be a good idea.
That could be.
Thank you.
All right, Mary. Thank you very much. And let's give Mike and Verocco a chance. Hi, Mike.
Hello. I have it's kind of complicated, but I'll make it as brief as I can here. I have a country well. I had a well that was 45 feet deep that the casing failed. I had to re-drill, and I got to 170 feet. That's how deep they drilled it, and I have iron oxide in my well like crazy. It plugs up everything. I had the plumber come and raise the pipe up to 120 feet to maybe get some cleaner water, but it was suggested even that I put some filler in there to seal up the bottom 30 or 40 feet to maybe get rid of that. And it's been over a year, so they don't have to stand behind good water anymore. What do I do?
I'm not an expert on well construction, but I think you may want to check with the DNR private water supply section. Their website would be dnr.wi.gov and find a contact. Unfortunately, I'm sorry, I can't answer your question.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. Appreciate your call. I had an email come in from Greg in Luxembourg, who says there are varying levels of complexity in gray water systems, using it for flushing toilets to drinking. What's your opinion and the state's position and regulations governing gray water systems? Tom?
Well, we've been allowing gray water systems in Wisconsin since 2003. One of the problems with our code, though, is that gray water is not mentioned into it. It's just talking about wastewater. We started with our code at a certain time. when we were finding that potable water wasn't available. So we decided what water quality did it require to do certain things. Gray water, for instance, we do have code requirements, but Commerce 8270 strictly is a performance code. So it talks about a water quality that needs to be met for a specific use. So, for instance, if I want to take a wastewater like gray water and I want to treat it, or I want to use some purpose for it, or let's say I want to treat it to flush my toilets with, there's standards that are saying that the water has to meet. There's some products that are out there right now that are available to perform this. A lot of times these are going to be components, though, and usually takes just more than one piece of equipment to do it, though. So,
and there are several applications installed where it has been done in a residential situation that Department of Commerce has approved, but it's also very common in commercial, like car washes and laundries.
And we're going to have to leave it there. Our guests are Tom Brown is with the Wisconsin Department of Commerce, Jeff Ripp is Water Conservation Coordinator with the Public Service Commission of Wisconsin, and Doug Witt is Showroom Manager of First Supply in Madison. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being here today.
It's my pleasure.
Coming up tomorrow, Shelley Ryan will be talking about the hazelnut industry developing in Wisconsin and the Midwest, and then talking with Annie Spiegelman of San Francisco about her book, Talking Dirt, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.